The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Broadcasting from on location in Burbank, California, this is the Knapsack Files. I'm Ken Knapsack. Welcome to the podcast feed where I bring in the wonderful and interesting people in the world that I exist in. And introduce them to you. And this one's been long in the making. In fact, the last couple have been long in the making, and that's what this month is about. It's about getting finally buckling down and bringing in the people that I've wanted to talk to for a while. And this young man, he's an upstanding young gentleman. You guys know him, you love him. He has many names, but today it's Christian Ruvakabla.
Oh, yeah. You know, every time you say it and you say it right, you're one of the only people that actually say the name right.
I'm not the best at Spanish pronunciations.
Neither am I, and I'm Spanish. Yeah.
But yeah, I did have a guy, Javier Ruvakabla, and his brother Eduardo Ruvakabla that worked for me. So
was it Ruvakabla or Ruvakalva?
Ruva, just like you. Ruvakabla. Because
there's Ruvakabla. another way of spelling it that I knew. Another dude in high school or no middle school, and it was always like, he spelled that way?
Is that where Cobster came from?
Yes. Yeah, because when I played baseball pretty much all my life, and then
that's where nicknames come from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a total baseball kind of nickname. But it was also because we all call each other by our last names, and no one wanted to say my last name because it was just such a tongue twister.
Yeah.
So it became like Ruvakabla, so Cobby. Cobster, cobblestone, corn on the cob. The only thing that our head coach, he ever did that I ever liked. So
Well, it stuck. Mm-hmm. And that's when I first met you. That was kind of your branding, right?
Yeah, because I started my own YouTube channel because there's a little channel out there called Schmoes Know that kind of inspired me a little bit to start my own stuff. And
That's where I want to start. You're a younger man than I, but this isn't about that. You got some good work record under your belt already. But I want to talk as an old guy to a young guy, and I'm not that old, and you're not that young.
I've got an old soul. I think I do got an old soul. Yeah.
Growing up in this age of digital media and careers, because you've come along at the right time, where I feel, and a lot of the guys say in the writers' room with Riley Macuga and myself, we kind of feel like, hey, we're great, we're doing good, we love where we're at, but man, if this had started 10 years earlier, we'd be farther along. How do you feel growing up in this digital age?
It's a little bit of the same because. Because I feel like when I started my own stuff on YouTube, it even felt a little too late. Like I should have done it years and years before because I've always had that lingering over me. I've always wanted to do something entertaining, to entertain people because that's what I like to do. I was a class clown like a lot of people. Okay. I wasn't the most popular class clown, nor the funniest really. But I just, I was goofy and I liked to, make people smile and entertain them.
So sweet. Did you always, I know you have a filmmaking side of you.
Yes.
How did it? I guess going back to the digital media question. So how did all your hopes and dreams kind of filter into this world, and where are you going to go from here with that?
I guess it started when I just started the channel itself, and I got into editing, and that's where I really got passionate about movie making and just the film industry in general. Because before I was just a casual watcher, my grandpa he touched. Showed me a lot of sci-fi movies, whether it was Star Wars or like Starship Troopers or anything like that. And
classics.
Deep classics. And I kind of fell in love with that genre.
Right.
And then it wasn't until, I'd never looked up forums or news sites or anything until I think when I saw Iron Man. And then there was like a post-credit scene for that. And I was like, oh, wow, cool. And then I just wanted to look up information about it, and I was like, oh, there's this whole world of, there's this whole industry where people are just talking about movies all day long and reporting stories. And so that all combined together, and I just kind of fell in love with all of it. And, it wasn't until I met all these great people that we work with today that I was able to finally put that kind of creative process hiding behind there and just, let it shine.
And so you talk about Iron Man being one of the first ones, and that's only, 2008?
Yeah.
And in terms of, in just time, that's not that long ago.
No.
9 years we're looking at now, but what a different world.
It is, because before that, I was a big book reader.
Yeah.
And I loved telling stories, because growing up, I read a lot. I read a lot of cheesy, there's this Captain Underpants movie. Like, I read stuff like that. I read these treehouse books where these two kids, they found this treehouse, and they time travel to different parts like the dinosaur times, time and travel
into Treehouse.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And I read all these different and interesting books, and I got really fascinating, and I started writing my own stuff.
Yeah.
And this was like maybe third or fourth grade, and I fell in love with just writing in general. It was obviously never good, but I just, the fact that I could just write something down. I remember having so many short stories, and then it stopped for a while.
Right.
And then when I went to high school, I went to a Catholic school, and this is where I started to learn a lot about religion.
Is that where a lot of your anger comes from?
yes, absolutely. 100%. I had to wear uniforms, and I didn't like that. I didn't like it. I had shorts. I had to shave all the time.
You had shorts?
Oh, yeah.
Angus Young AC/DC school shorts?
Shirts tucked in.
Oh, wow.
Could not carry my backpack anywhere. It was a senior privilege to have your backpack.
Well, it should be.
Yeah, yeah. And, I guess all that sort of built in, but when I started learning about all these stories in the Bible, it really fascinated me. And that kind of jump-started me into writing again, because I learned about all these stories and I wanted to tell my own. And so I ended up reading more in high school as opposed to studying or doing my homework and writing my own stories. And
we're not that unlike as I struggle through words and sentences on this hungover Sunday, because I was a very smart student, and you're a smart guy too. Put in all these honors classes early on. We're talking third, fourth grade. I couldn't care less about it, because I wanted to write my own little comic books. I got bored with all that stuff.
Yeah, who wants to learn about calculus? You know, who's going to be using calculus unless you're a huge math nerd, or you're going to be actually using it for something later on? Because I didn't know what I wanted to do in high school. You know, I was playing baseball at the time. I was trying to write these stories. That was my only creative process. Like, my whole life was just school and sports.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I had any other time to do anything else until I stopped playing baseball my senior year. I went through my senior year, and that was it. And then I entered college, and I found all this free time. Yeah. I obviously had to get a job because I needed to pay for college, because it was just...
Well, good. You're hardworking.
Yeah. I try my best. But it's funny, because my high school ended up being a lot more expensive than my actual college was.
Well, for all those uniforms.
For all those uniforms, yeah. Yeah.
You didn't go to a Catholic college, right?
No. I went to Cal State Long Beach.
Struck out to the real world.
Yeah.
So you played baseball for the Catholics.
I did. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The St. Marie Popes.
St. John Bosco. St. John Bosco, the Braves. Yeah. They called us Jags because we're just other guys.
Just other guys.
Even though that a lot of people were treated very special.
Yeah. Yeah. So what position you play?
Catcher.
Right.
I was a catcher. Yeah.
Right. Which it's a leading question because I knew that, but I wanted the public to know that you and I share the love of the best position in baseball.
Oh, there is no one more commanding than the actual catcher himself. I mean, you got catchers, shortstop, and center field. Those are your main ones.
Those are your leaders.
Yeah, but you're in control of everything. You're making the shifts. You're calling the plays. So.
You're the only person who touches the ball or has the ball at you at every play.
Yeah.
Do you think that helped you later on in life being a producer?
a little bit. I mean, because I was I was always a very hard worker.
Yeah.
You know, even in high school, I don't think I consider myself an incredibly smart person. I always did my homework. I always just got by. I never got any D's or F's or anything. So that was,
win.
As long as I always just got by.
Yeah.
And it was kind of the same thing with baseball, because I'm a small dude.
Yeah.
I'm not the fastest person in the world, but I could keep running. I could just keep going. I have that stamina.
I'll just get there.
Yeah. I'll just get there.
You'll drop off and die.
Exactly. And, I didn't have the strongest legs. I didn't have the strongest arm. But every time that, I had to put in a situation to, show the coaches that I can do it, I did it. Yeah.
That's similar to what you do here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, yeah.
It is. You grind it out. You're hardworking. You toss a bat every now and then, but you get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to, so you're establishing who you are, who you want to be in this YouTube channel starts. Did you at the time think, I'm going to go all the way, I'm going to be a reviewer, and you look at your idols like the Schmoes and those guys, and then I also want to ask you about watching the Schmoes as a fan early on, but what, did you have any goals? You're just like, this is the thing to do.
I think it was a little bit of both, because when I started doing it, it was like my time to shine.
Right.
I remember editing that very first review, and it was horrible, because I did 10 different takes. I edited 10 different videos, and I'm like, which one do I like? I don't like any of these, because I was just so in, because I'm a big head case. I'm always always in my head. And I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. I just always told people, like, I want to talk about this. I want to reflect on right. these movies and tell people what I feel about it, because I think I can say something about them.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing all these guys review movies and how casual it could be, it was just something
how casual it looked.
Casual
yeah,
it looked.
Yeah, yeah.
It looked, obviously. Yeah. yeah. And, yeah, I wanted to let my voice be heard. Because I think I was tired of just being the only one coming out of a movie and babbling on. And really? All my friends are just kind of like, yeah, yeah,
sure,
cool,
sure.
cool, let's go get something to eat, you know? And it wasn't anything where
that shot!
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I wanted to dissect it a little bit, whereas they're like, oh, I didn't really think about that. Cool. What are you getting from Buffalo Wild Wings? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a little bit of a downer, like, seeing a movie and not being able to, you know, have a back and forth with someone.
Yeah.
So I found that with a camera.
With a camera just, and YouTube and a community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you say you're in your head, mm-hmm. what kind of in your head does that mean? Do you have self-doubt, anxiety?
I think a little bit of
anger.
All of,
what do you get?
Oh, it's definitely anger.
We tease you about your Latin fire, but is that what you got? Because you don't strike me as a depression-based person like I do.
It isn't. It's a little bit of that. Like, I think there was a pretty dark time in college that I went through
sure.
that I you know, did the whole therapy thing.
Cool.
I tried
okay.
it out. I, you know, it was very hard for me to do it. It was a thing that the school, you know, provided for us, you know.
So Cal State Long Beach.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
And it was really great. And I was kind of going through some relationship stuff with my ex that I needed to just kind of reflect on, and some family issues and nothing major. And it's kind of, and I've moved past it all.
Right.
But I've always just doubted myself on everything that I did, whether it's, you know, playing baseball, because baseball, it was a huge thing. It always, you know, it'd always be my time to shine. It always,
right.
and I would be talking, it's literally Bull Durham. It's just, come on,
yeah,
meat,
yeah.
get out of your head, meat.
Yeah.
It was always that. And that kind of carried over with me in like everything that I did.
Yeah.
And even till this day, it kind of still haunts me.
So how do you plan to attack that? Because you've got a long road ahead of you,
yeah.
hopefully, with a nice career. And that can sidetrack people if you're in your head.
Yeah. I think part of it is not necessarily setting it aside,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, what I do, like here, I'm constantly going. I'm constantly working. I don't
right.
like to just have a computer in front of me and not do anything.
Yeah.
And I kind of just keep myself preoccupied.
Don't give yourself room to doubt.
Yeah, I think maybe just shut it out entirely. Like, just try to just get it out of there, because you know, part of me is, you know, I always want to go back and seek help and talk to somebody.
Yeah,
but also it's like it's even the doubt is coming into there. It's like, you know, does it hurt me as a person for doing so, or
right.
or should I just, you know, ante up and just do it?
Now you have a good family, you know, outside looking in. I mean, great mother and father, everything. So did they raise you to be able to talk about this stuff, or
I think I never talked to them about it,
right?
Because I didn't want them to think that it had anything to do with them, because I think
right.
it was just me.
Right.
And, you know, I love my parents, and, you know, they worked really hard to get where they are today and to get where me and my other brothers are today.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had me at a very young age. You know,
I was going to say, your parents are like 2 years older than me, aren't
they? My dad is, I think, 45. My mom is 45 and my dad's like 43. So
that's 2 years older than me.
They had me very, and my mom was, I think 20 and my dad was 18.
Oh, that's great. That,
yeah.
That's great.
So, you know, I can never like, I mean, I joke with them all the time.
Yeah.
You know, if I do something stupid, I was like, "Wow, this is, you guys wanted me." So, but you know, they really did work hard. I mean, it was a different time too. Everyone was having kids at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it's just interesting how things kind of progress over life, and you know how different we become.
Yeah, yeah. You've gone. Come far and got a long way to go, man.
Yeah, it's a long way to go. I don't want to go. Sometimes I just want to just
drive off into the ocean.
Yeah,
what do you want to do? Want to do? I worry about you now. Now me and Uncle Mark Ellis need to take you out for more lunches here. This is
no. I mean, it's just it's.
You're
I don't,
a very intense young man. Is that accurate to say?
I am very because I'm very sensitive as well. I take everything that I do very seriously, but
oh,
I also
boy. And you work with the schmoes.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the biggest contradiction about me is that I do take everything seriously, but I'm also a big jokester, or at least I try to be. You know, I like to try to have fun and poke fun. And sometimes, you know, it's that situation where if I'm poking fun at somebody and I don't know if I'm taking it too far, and then eventually it comes back on me and I get really upset about it.
Sure.
I guess what they call butthurt is the phrase that
it's a scientific term.
Yeah, it's what I heard a lot growing up. And, you know, sometimes, you know, like I want to say something, I'm like, no, stop, don't say that.
Yeah.
You don't want to say that because it's going to come back and bite you in the ass.
Yeah.
And so I stopped myself from doing that. And it's just constant battle, you know. And it's funny because, you know, the stuff that we do stuff live. We do stuff online. And sometimes I don't know what I'm going to say. And sometimes I stop myself like, there's 2,000 people watching right now. You probably shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
So
it's the curse and the blessing of what we do.
Yeah.
Your personality is going to be what drives you, but you got to be careful where that goes.
Yeah. Especially today. I mean, it's a very sensitive time and everything that we're doing it online.
It is. Have you found yourself curbing anything you would do or say normally? Not that you're some raging racist who's going to say some horrible things, but I mean, like,
At this point,
because I do, I change my news. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and I can, but you change it for the better, I think, too.
Yeah.
But it's the same. I'm the same person. Yeah. You know, I'm obviously a lot more like. There's sometimes that I do want to say things, but I'm not smart enough to put it in a way that sounds intelligent, or you know, if it comes from me, it's like, shut up, Copster. You're the guy with the beard.
This is that inside voice.
Yeah, it's the
you've
demon
said like three times you're not smart.
I'm not smart. Have you seen the Wanger Show?
I've seen the Wanger Show. It's a rambunctious program.
Uh-huh. Yes, very much
the
so.
The Grace and Wendy episode I watched.
Oh, okay.
It just like a cacophony of voices.
There's a lot of voices on
a lot
that
of voices
one.
Yeah.
I didn't
up.
Think through five voices on
five, one show.
One show. But,
a lot of voices. No, but I've noticed that. I understand. I'm someone I think I'm low on the totem pole, but so I recognize game.
Right.
When I can recognize someone like I'm not that smart. You're a smart guy. You're a smart guy. You wouldn't have got to where you are the best producer the Schmoes No Podcast has ever had.
No, stop it.
With
thank
the efforts.
You. Well, I've had two great producers before me.
Sure.
And that's the reason why.
Sure. Well, and we set the tone. But, you know, Miri Jedekin, who took over for me, brought in a lot of changes that was needed for a different time for a different show. And you've picked up the ball. And without you, we wouldn't have had intro graphics and all those kinds of things, because that's not something I would have done.
Well, I think... Well, I tell Cody this all the time because me and Cody Cody Hall.
Cody Hall.
Yeah, not Upham. Cody Hall.
Yeah,
we become really Upham. Good friends.
Forgot about Upham.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he swept that under the rug as fast as he could.
That's good.
Yeah, we become good friends, and I tell him all the time how crazy it is where we are now and where we came from. And one of the things I tell him all the time is I actually regret all the days of me being an associate producer that I because I felt like I could have done more to help you out.
Sure.
Now, when I took on producer, I think I fully realized how, you know, many moving parts there really were to it. On top of, you know, because like I could produce a show and not have images or graphics or anything like that. It could just be the show, you know, it strip it down kind of like how Toad Hop was. And it was just people talking, and that's fine, too. But, you know, I wanted to go all out. I wanted to have some kind of visual representation for people to see, because obviously we are catering to both audio and video.
Which is tough, yeah.
It is tough, and, you know, finding that balance is something that we're always striving to do.
Yeah.
And so I always wanted to make it look as pretty as possible. And one of the things, like, I regret not helping you out during the AfterBuzz days, because I felt like I could have done more.
Sure, well, we were figuring it out, too. And I was figuring it out, because I always say I had the title of producer. It got me the job at Screen Junkies, but like I had to tell Andy when I was getting hired, I am not a Rolodex producer. I don't have a list of people, a camera guy I can hire, a talent person. I am a radio producer.
Right.
I can sit there, and that's what Toad Hop was.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have to worry about pictures. I just had to worry about, my news, I wasn't on camera. We had cameras capturing things, but it was radio. So I've still to this day struggled. So that's why I appreciate what you've done to make it more of a segment and show pictures and graphics of my ugly face up there, because like I still I don't have a teleprompter, and I think we're trying to correct that.
Yeah,
but I also don't have the skills. I'm not like, Sinead DeFries is a teleprompter master. Mm. I'm not like that, so I'm going to struggle a little bit. But it's like, I still wish I just had my headphones and was looking down.
Right, right. Because
that's what I did. So and then Miri had a lot of different experiences in TV and brought in that, and that was, she was perfect for that time. But no, you guys have done the Wangers, the behind the scene boys.
Yeah. I think that's one of the beautiful things about the show is that I can trust the guys that are working, working to make the show look as great as it is. And I think before when I started, I was always checking cameras and making sure. And I still do that, obviously. But now it's like if I'm running behind on something and I have to have a quick turnaround on, a specific sponsor that we're doing or like a last minute image that we have to create for the show.
Right.
I trust Ace, RB3, Beardo and Cody to have everything set up without any question.
Beardo, really? You trust Beardo?
Well, no, he's actually messed up a few times on audio.
Where did you find Beardo?
Funny story.
Brian. I know his name's Brian.
Brian Perez. Yeah.
Brian Castillo.
So with him, my cousin on my mom's side.
I thought you were going to say he was your cousin.
No, he's not my cousin. No, he's not. Thank God. No, I wouldn't want that. No, but my cousin, who he's a few years older than me, he was kind of my big brother growing up. You know, he got me drunk the first time.
Oh,
he took me to parties and
took
to concerts.
Brothel first time.
Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right.
He did all these things, and I looked up to him. To this day, I still do.
Right.
And one of his very good friends, his good friend David, we went out to the river a couple of times.
Gotta go to the river.
Laughlin, all these places. And David, his friend, younger brother, is Brian Perez.
Wow.
And
that's a lot of dots to get us Beardo.
Oh, yeah. And it's really funny because I remember Brian, he emailed me about something. And, we get DMs and messages, emails all the time from, fans. And it's really awesome that we do. But sometimes, we're so busy that we get caught up with it. And it was just one of those emails that he sent me that I kind of brushed off. And then he emailed again about, some audio work because me and Cody were starting to do our own short films.
Short films,
sketches and stuff. And he was like, oh, okay, cool. You do audio? Cool. What else do you do? Where do you live? He said Walnut. And I was like, oh, Walnut. My cousin, she's like, yeah, I know. I've been to the river with you and your family before. I'm like, okay. And then, he sends me all these pictures of him with my family, my little brother, my mom and dad. I was like, holy crap.
We're practically related.
Yeah. And,
there's me and Beardo holding the sharing a beer in a boat.
Right, right.
I don't remember you at all.
I don't know if I actually went to the river with him because I didn't. Even till this day, I'm not the hugest fan of going to Havasu or anything because they go to the river. The river party.
There's a part of my family, my extended family, that goes to the river.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm not the river guy.
No, I mean, I grew up with it. My family, they all have boats. They got a river house, all that. Yep. And I love going out there once in a while, but they would do it so much.
Yeah.
And there'd be a lot of times, especially in college, where I had to, as I hit the microphone, quote unquote, study, that I would stay home. And I think one of the times he went with them and I wasn't there. So, and then it all came together. And then he joined us to do our channel, Amateur Hour Films, that we were doing for a little bit. And he just started doing audio. And, I told him, hey, you need some kind of sound engineer if you're interested, and kind of brought him on board.
And it works. Everything on the Wanger side has worked.
We're trying to make it work.
Which I'll tell you, every time, when Christian was like, interview this guy, JT, well, at the time, just Josh Tapia.
Right.
That whole story's been told of him lying his way into the show. I was like, I don't think this is a good idea to hire a fan. Then it was like, we need another one. We're going to have this competition. This kid Copster's going to come in.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't think it's a good job to have a fan. Good idea to have a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Cody Hall stands outside Chili's. I think we made him watch us all eat in the window.
Yep.
Andres, I was like, it's not good to have a fan. Mm-hmm. And every time, I don't know why I keep saying it. It's not just getting lucky. It's been part of the fate of this journey of the show.
Yeah.
You guys are all amazing.
It's really funny. We weren't, weirdos. We just came on and we were like, yeah, we want to be part of this.
Yeah.
We weren't there just to fanboy out and like say hi to all these people. Because I mean, when I met you guys, it was incredibly intimidating, especially you.
Thank you.
Yes.
But let's go to that. So, because you were a legit Schmoes No fan.
Yeah.
As was JT. I remember him calling in. You called in before, right?
I've called in several times. Yeah.
RB3, 9 years old. Yeah. RB3 called in.
Yes, he did. Yeah. I think the first show I ever called in was when Stuckman, Flick Pick, and Johns were all on the arm wrestling show together.
Yep. The arm wrestling episode.
Yeah, I remember.
What did you call in again? I remember the calls.
It was, I was calling in to win a t-shirt, and we had to guess what was all of their first movie reviews.
That's right.
And I got all of them except for, I think I got all of them except for Stuckman, because I think Stuckman reviewed some anime film that I didn't know what it was. Yeah.
Ace would have got that.
Probably, yeah. So
walk me through that. You know, it's interesting to hear your perspective of that at the time of joining this crazy circus, the Schmoes No movie world. Most of my listeners in the Napsuck Files are obviously from that fandom, so I hope it's entertaining. But it's interesting to go from fan to working part of it, right?
Yeah, because I was part of this little group called We Live Film, and it was like a small little community where a bunch of movie reviewers would, you know, they would review with that title over them, and then we would collaborate with each other. We'd do certain reviews, and I did these Netflix reviews for the longest time for their channel. And then from there, I think I met JTE, and I think I just, you know, added him on Facebook just because, oh, you know, he's part of the Schmoes. It's, you know, I don't really send Facebook requests for friends anymore, that was how I did it back in the day. And then I remember he set up a post saying, hey, I got an extra ticket for a screening for World War Z. Anybody want to go? And I didn't want to, like, blatantly say, hey, yeah, I want to go. Yeah. I just, like, liked the post. And then sure enough, he DM'd me. He's like, hey, I saw you like the post. Do you want to go to this? I know you live in L.A. Should we go? And I was like, okay. All right. Let's do it. And
Love affair began. Yeah,
yep. I met JT for the first time at L.A. Live to see World War Z.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we did a review together, and then one thing led to another. He asked me to help his little segments he did called Meet the Schmoes.
That's right.
And I remember I met with him. We went to right here in Pasadena because he lived like right down the street from where I live now. We went to Doghouse. We had some food. And then first time he said, he's like, hey, you know, I've been talking to Christian a little bit. We're thinking of having someone else come on board as another intern. Would you be interested in that? And I'm like, yeah. Absolutely. And I think from there on, that's where my world kind of changed.
So you've been listening to the podcast, obviously, but you've been watching the Schmoes since their YouTube review days. Mm-hmm. What is your perspective of them and us, including me, be honest, then to now? Like, how does that change?
Oh, man.
How soon was it? And this isn't about any, you know, sometimes work is work, and there's been stressful times, been angry times, we all have that. But I mean, to go from, oh my gosh, that's Christian, to yes, sir, I got it. Like, that's a transition. That's a surreal one at times.
I can't, oh man, it's like seamless almost. Like, it just happened out of nowhere without really thinking about it, because I still look up to all of you guys. And, you know, even
you're too
though
kind.
I mean it, because everything that you guys do, I strive to do and try to do what you guys do, but, you know, try to exceed that. And because as crazy as maybe everybody on the show has driven me, it's still I still love the fact that I get to come back the next day and work with everybody, you know, and in passing. And now that we all work under the same roof for the most part, it's crazy to think, you know, that I was just I was just a fan, and now I'm a counterpart. I'm working alongside with everybody, and I couldn't be more grateful. So I can't remember a specific moment when that really changed, when it switches.
It's got to be kind of early, right? I mean,
yeah.
Because you picked it up right away. It's not the same, because even though I'm a huge fan of him, I wouldn't say it was like he wasn't a great creative icon of mine or anything, but I loved his movies, but like Kevin Smith. And when I started working with him at Screen Junkies, and like I remember I was in a pitch meeting, and he's pitching to me and Andy. And that was I was like, Kevin Smith is pitching a show idea to me and Andy. But then after that, you got to go. You got to work.
Right.
So it switches off. And then Kevin became that guy once a week, twice a week I'd see. And be like, hey, dude, you're late. How you doing? Come on in. So
I think it, you know, with that, I think it might have been around when, because, you know, when I joined, it was during the Toad Hop days, and it was in the very end of the Toad Hop days. It was,
that's right. I forget. You were very, very, very end, yeah.
It was probably the last month we were there, which was really sad because I loved going to JT's place, taking the metro, trekking on down. It was a little adventure every single Thursday. And going to Buffalo Wild Wings for like 2 minutes because we had to go back and catch the metro.
That's right, you had to get out of there.
We missed the metro one time, and I didn't get home till like 2 a.m, and I had school the next day, and it was a trip. But you know, it's all really great memories now. But I think it was when I started in those times, and Christian wanted me to take over for all the behind the scenes stuff that we shot on the little flip cam that I don't know where it's at now.
Still around somewhere.
Somewhere. It's somewhere. Because I was always cautious of what I was doing on that because I was still fairly new to editing. And I think, you know, once it hit a point where he just completely trusted me to do what I want with that.
Yeah.
I think that's where it kind of lifted up. Like, you know, I'm still a fan of this guy and all these other guys that are part of the show and gals, of course, that were on there. But now it's like we're all working together for the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's a nice thing. And, you know, that's when I was able to let my creative juices flow without anything holding it back, which was nice, you know.
Why was I the most intimidated to meet? This is crazy.
Ken, you can ask anybody. You can ask Cody. You can ask Ace, RB3, Beardo.
Beardo's still afraid of me.
As he should be. He should, because he needs to remember, he's still an intern. He works really hard like everybody else.
Know your role, Beardo.
Yes. But there's just something about you that comes up. I think it might have been the suit. It might have been the suit because you got all these dudes here wearing, you know, Rip shirts or T-Public shirts and JT with his backwards hat. And then this one dude in the corner, like very
quiet,
stern looking, and then a nice suit. And then you come out and do these news segments. You're like, wow. I think that might be part of it, too, because I think you are the funniest one out of the whole crew. And I'm not saying that just because
I won't tell JT.
Yeah. I think that was it. I think, you know, no matter what we did, it's like we'd always joke about it. If we made a funny tweet and Ken or Ellis or Riley or McCoo, like if any of you guys liked it, that's where we're like, yeah, it's the fist pump. Like, okay, we did it. We did our duties for the day.
Yeah.
You know, so
I think it's the persona. It's not a persona. I mean, there's definitely an on-air persona that I have, but it's very much me off-air. But it's like I had the problem in my other job too, though. So my nickname was Asshole for a while, and I'm just the sweetest guy in the world. He just wants to be kind of left alone and uncomfortable. I'm Boba Fett at Jabba's palace at parties, you know. So I think it all. Yeah, the suit. Believe me, the suit puts a. It's so funny what people. The perception is the reality for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I've walked into strip clubs in suits. And I've had 4 strippers rush me because one of them's like, well, because it looks like you have money. And I'm like, oh, honey, you have come to the wrong cheap suit.
So I've never been to a strip club before. So the first time that
I
should wear a suit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But it's changed. You're on board. You're running the ship well there. We don't know where it's going to go from here. But I'm glad you were there for phase 3.
Yeah.
I do forget that you were there for what I can still consider my favorite phase. I'm glad we are where we need to be. But that's my favorite.
Absolutely.
Phase.
And still for me, too, because I remember getting beer for everyone from the little keg that we had there.
Oh, the keg back there, the WeWork facility. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That was always nice. And
Johnny Ice, the engineer.
Johnny Ice. I interviewed Katie Sackhoff, and that was like a big thing. Yeah. Like, you know, it was like a behind the scenes little interview thing too. But always greeting in the guests, leading them in. That was always fun.
Going downstairs to try to get them.
Yeah.
On the outside, security guard wouldn't let them in. Yeah.
Which is funny story. I actually was there recently because when we did this thing for 40X, which is like the newer, like up beyond 3D kind of experience in a movie theater, that is in the same building as Toad Hop was.
Okay.
Yeah, so we were like
Hollywood and La Brea,
me and RB3 were looking around and I was like, where is this is where we, and I was like, it was like a little tour to RB3. I was like, look, RB3, this is where we used to do it.
The Schmoes history.
Yeah.
Good copster.
Yeah. Tour. Especially, I loved it especially from where we went from phase 3 to phase 4, because when we went to phase 4, you know, we didn't have a permanent studio. We were grateful we had Drama 3-4 to help us out with that, and we were using a Mac to just turn, swivel just back swivel, and forth.
Literally had to physically turn a Mac desktop.
Yeah, me and JT had to switch off. It was like, you're getting tired? Here, I'll do it next. And
I did my news on a couch curled up. It was both the best and worst.
Oh, yeah.
Those memories.
Mm-hmm.
We fought through a lot. Why, switch subjects here, why the hell do you like Laughlin more than Las Vegas?
Because it's what I...
Is this part of you being an old soul?
Absolutely. Because I remember we went to Laughlin a hell of a lot more than we did Havasu. Because when my great-grandmother was still alive, and even my great-grandfather, I think, too, they loved to gamble. They loved to go to Laughlin.
Right.
They would sit on the slot machines forever. And, you know, just they would just have a blast there. And I just remember as a kid going there and the best moments was walking into the casino for the first time, that cool breeze blasting at you and the smell of cigarettes and the noise of the slot machines and the ding, 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 everything going on.
I love it. Yeah.
It's such a great feeling. And, you know, I didn't go to Vegas a whole lot either.
Right.
And it wasn't until later because I had family that lived out in Vegas for a while and we would go out there once in a while. But there was just something with Laughlin that kind of stuck with me. And we would go out on the river, too, over there as well.
Yeah, because the river's there, right?
Yeah, it's right there. On there. Yeah. And something about it just kind of stuck with me. And then one of my best friends, because his birthday is the same day as my birthday, we went to Laughlin one year because they have a house in Bullhead, which is, a couple miles away. And we would make it kind of like a birthday annual thing where we would just go to Laughlin, just like, four of us. And just young kid, the youngest people probably in Laughlin
by
all
far.
The weekend. Yeah. And
by far.
It's just so relaxing. You know, Vegas is just all over the place. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's obviously noisy. It never sleeps. And then Laughlin is the same thing, but, quieter.
Quieter.
Just a little bit quieter.
Quieter.
I tell you, there was one trip we went out there. We stayed on one blackjack table from 10 o'clock at night to 6 in the morning.
Really?
And I got really drunk. I probably lost a lot of money, but it was the most fun I've ever had.
Just sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
That's... I've never really been to Laughlin, so I'm not even making fun of it. I just know the reason why it's so funny to me is because I used to have an employee who was a World War II vet. He worked for me. He was in his mid to late 70s at the time, and he would go to Laughlin all the time, and that made sense for...
I probably gambled with him.
78-year-old Leonard to waddle on out to Laughlin, but then I hear you're like, oh, we're going to Laughlin this weekend.
Uh-huh.
Like, what?
Nothing gets me more exciting. More excited to take an extremely expensive taxi to go from Bullhead all the way to Laughlin and gamble out there. We would go from one casino... All the way to the end and back, get food out there. It's just, I've been craving it. I want to go again.
You want to go again?
I always want to go out there.
I know we're talking about a schmo trip to Vegas, but maybe it's a schmo trip to Laughlin.
I don't know how everyone would really. I'd have a blast.
You'd really have a blast.
Yeah.
Are you a bigwig down there? You walk in, they're like, Mr. Cobster, how are you doing?
No, actually.
Your room is waiting.
No, I love staying in those hotels as a kid, but I don't stay in those hotels anymore.
We
try to save as much money as we can, and I don't want to lose. I mean, I think the worst time I've ever had gambling wise is maybe like 300 down, and that's not even
at like one table.
Like one table. So
it's tough.
I get carried away.
I lost close to 1,000 in my last trip to Vegas in May, and that was not in one sitting.
Right.
It almost would be more impressive if it was in one sitting.
Mm.
Be a story to tell.
Yeah,
I dropped 1,000 on that table.
Right.
No, it's over the course of 4 days at the Game of Thrones slots, lost probably $1,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's gambling.
And
let me be
clear out there to anybody, I don't have that money to lose.
No, I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
I am because I'm like, oh yeah, I got paid this weekend. I'll just put it all down. No, you probably should not have done that. Probably shouldn't have. But yeah, Schmo's Vegas trip.
Schmo's Laughlin.
Yeah,
Schmo's something. We'll do that there. Where look into the future here. Where does young Mr. Ruvicabla go with his career?
Yeah.
Collider's great. We're here. We're here now.
Yeah.
But you're too young to want to stick in one spot for long.
No, and that was kind of me growing up as well. I was like a utility guy. I liked to dabble into different things. At my last job before I started editing, I was helping around in the art department, picking stuff up for people, cutting up whatever specific projects they had to do, and then eventually going off and helping out at video shoots and putting these videos together. And where I see that in the future is kind of the same thing. Like, there's a lot of projects that I'm working on the side besides Schmoes and besides Collider.
Right.
And I just want to keep doing that as long as I can, because right now, for as long as YouTube is still around,
yeah,
we have this platform to, and we have it to use it. You know, we have it at our will to do anything and everything creative as we possibly can. And whether it's me putting together a 30 for 30 parody documentary.
One of the greatest things ever done.
Thank you. It was like doing something like that for a channel as big as Collider is,
yeah,
and seeing the reaction to it and people asking for a follow up for that is great.
Yeah.
And that's just one thing. And then obviously, you know, we have things here. We have the Schmo show itself. We have the Schmodown, and right, doing all those things is really exciting. But I want to just keep my creative juices going.
Yeah.
I've been working on a web series for the longest time with Cody that we want to get going very soon.
Oh, yeah? Without sharing details of your highly secret project.
I think I might have, because we actually have a voice role that we want you to do.
Oh, I'm on board.
It's very brief. But
have my commitment, my verbal commitment.
Awesome.
I am attached to Star.
Yes, awesome. Because I loved your voiceover in the documentary more than anything else.
Yeah,
it was so much fun.
That was fun.
But no, we've been working on a 5-part web series. I came up with the idea like a year or two ago, and me and Cody actually shot like 3 episodes of it at my house a long time ago with just like one camera, just a couple of lights, and we never ended up finishing it. And now that we're at a place where we have a lot more resources.
Right.
And, you know, bringing Frank on board, because, you know, Frank, who's one of the editors here at Collider, he's just one of the best.
Might be a genius.
I mean,
I consider him a certifiable genius, a creative genius at what he does.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've been going back and forth. I've sent him a bunch of scripts me and Cody have worked on, and he's loved it. And, you know, I've seen a bunch of Frank's work that he's done, and we want to collaborate and you know, actually shoot it. So that's, like, the next big thing. And then, you know, like, we always want to do sketch stuff all the time. Like, with our amateur hour stuff, we've always been craving to just get together, shoot something, whether it's scripted or if it's not scripted. You know, we do the Wanger show all the time. And,
sure.
And, you know, just keeping all these things continuously going. And, you know, I've been trying to write a book for the longest freaking time, but it's just
about your adventures in Laughlin.
I'm not there yet. I gotta lose 1,000 on the table first, and then I'll start writing the
goals.
Book. But, cause I've been reading a lot more and getting back to my old, my old days of writing.
So if you're dabbling in a lot of areas, as you should there, do you, and this is, again, going back to the generational thing here, you look across this battlefield here, and there's a lot of different ways to go because time where were the times we're in now has made that possible.
Yeah.
You and Cody could shoot this web series, and next thing you know, you're selling it to Netflix. You know, that doesn't happen all the time, but it's possible. Where I moved to town in 98 and was like, how do I get over this wall?
Right.
No one wants me in there. Mm. No one I met with. I had a phone with one of a pastor who has since passed away. He's a great guy, Pastor Ron Salisbury. He gave me a phone number of his old college buddy who wrote Summersby? Was it with the Richard Gere?
Mm.
He was a Civil War vet, returns home to Jodie Foster, but he might not be her actual husband, and it's kind of weird.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he wrote this, and I was supposed to call him, and I was like, in my head, I'm like, oh, this is it. This guy's gonna have him tell me how to sell one of these scripts, and I'm and he was just like, cool, yeah, join a writers group, and you'll meet some people. I really can't do much more than that. This town's kind of crazy. Good luck.
Well, that's kind of the thing. It's like, you know, for every, you know, 1 5 episode series that me and Cody do, there's 18,000 more
Absolutely.
Out there. And whether, you know, whatever we are writing or putting together or, you know, that we want to shoot, we're never shooting for the stars that way. We're not shooting a web series and in hopes like, oh, Netflix is going to see this, you know, like it's always that back of the mind. That'd be great. But the main thing is that we can do it right now and we have the access to, and, you know, with Schmoes and Collider, it's a nice little following, and it's also something extra for them to see on the side because there's so many after shows and recaps and reviews and talk shows.
Yep.
And, you know, we just want to do something different outside of that. And, you know, obviously, there's obviously nothing wrong with, you know, everything that everyone's doing today because it's very popular and we love watching these things. But I like to, you know, expand from that. And whatever we do with Schmoes, it's like I love doing that, but I also want to just continue my creative, you know, flow.
Do you, do you, a man of your age, again, it's sounds like I'm so much older than you. I'm not.
You're not.
Excuse me. But there is a generational difference and a time difference. Are you a type of young man that puts career before relationships? I know you got a great relationship now. I'm not taking you uncomfortable. You don't cry, all right? Beardo, you don't need to make everyone cry. How do you have a balance to that? Because for the longest time, I thought I had to choose one or the other.
I think I found a good balance now, mm-hmm. because before I was with a girl
long term.
Yeah,
you like met in preschool.
We met in sophomore year and in high school, and we were together for like 7 or 8 years. And you know that was like a third of my life.
That's ages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought the world of that situation. Mm-hmm. And I think when I started everything with Schmoes, I think I saw it starting affecting my life, maybe for the best, maybe for the worst. I don't think it ultimately like was the cause for the end of our relationship. But,
right.
You know, it was like I would see her and I would be talking about, you know, what we did for Schmoes and what we're talking about, or this funny story with Makuga or something like that. Sure. Anything like that.
We had to pull Makuga out of a fight at Buffalo Wild Wings. Yeah.
Me and Makuga got in a fight after a fan meetup. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see it in her that it was becoming too much because I was constantly going on about it. I was always, you know, excuse me, I was always talking about movies, you know, this news story. I was like, hey, because like it was that thing like before about me talking to the camera. Now that I actually had someone, I was talking to her about it, everything, you know, and I had forgotten that she's not necessarily in that bubble like we are.
Yeah.
And so it became like an eye roller, and nothing against her.
No,
it's I don't blame her for you know, not being incredibly interested in all that.
And tell me again about Mark Ellis.
but I also do like that though.
Sure.
Like my girlfriend right now, she isn't necessarily in this world.
Right,
you know, she's not part of it, but she's interested in hearing about these things. But I've also managed to not like let it like be everything that we're talking about, because we could, you know, it even gets to the point today where, you know, not I don't always want to talk about movies, you know, or TV all
God
the time.
Forbid, right?
You know, it's weird how obsessive I was about everything, and now it's just like I don't want to talk about this anymore. Not at least not for today. You know, I want to go off. I want to go to Disneyland and not think about, you know.
Gobster, stand by, because the older you get, again, going to the age thing, you care less about it. It's weirdest thing, because at your age, I could have told you every stat of the New York Yankees roster.
Yeah.
I could have, people look at me now and say, I don't watch a lot of movies, and that's the running joke, and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But back then I saw everything. Every Monday I'd go see a movie, a matinee, and I have subscribed to Cinescape and Premiere Magazine and Rolling Stone, Entertainment Weekly, Empire Magazine. I had all these magazines.
Yeah.
Fade In, all the screenwriting stuff. And it just, after a while you do, I love it still, but I want to turn it off.
Ken, I'm scaring myself because that's what I'm becoming right now. Because
you're an old man.
I used to go to movies Thursday nights all the time. I can't remember the last movie I saw in theaters. I guess it always obviously depends on what's coming out and everything. And there's certainly movies that I'm going to be going out and seeing opening weekend. But now I find myself like, I don't have to force myself to go out and see it, you know?
Do you find it? And I think, cause I know there's other people listening who, you know, are in their 30s or 40s or 50s or beyond and are like, no, I'm still obsessed with movies. And, and thank God for those people, because that's why we have careers.
Right.
But I think it might be related to that. This does turn into a job we enjoy.
Yeah.
I love Star Wars. I have talk Star Wars. I want to be known as a Star Wars guy.
Mm-hmm.
If you meet me at a bar and you want to talk Star Wars with me, we're going to do it for a little bit.
Yeah.
But then I want to get on because it's my job now. And that's a little disappointing. Do you feel that at all, too?
Absolutely. Yeah,
I'm disappointed with myself.
No, absolutely. Because we've surrounded ourselves so much with it. And, you know, even with, like yesterday, like, or when, depending on when this is coming out, we went to Grace's birthday thing. And me and Cody just ended up talking about Schmodown for like 10 minutes.
Right.
And we're like, what just happened?
Yeah.
Why did we start? And we love Shmo now. We do. But, like, you know, it just one thing leads to another, and it just kind of pops up there. So, you know, it's just, it's about, I think it's about, like, experiencing other things outside of what we do now. And I think we're at a place where, like, I've had my time of obsession. Yeah. And I still have my obsessions, you know.
Still have it.
You know, I still, I mean, I'm a big Star Wars fan as well. And, and I want to see the next movie just as anybody else. But, you know, I don't. You know, I don't necessarily care for sitting down and dissecting every single little thing.
They're making another one?
I think so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'd heard they don't have a plan.
Yeah, they don't have a plan.
Not a plan at all.
You know, which means my dad was right, because he saw Seven and said, I think they're making another. They left it open, my dad said. They left it open to make a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did that.
There you go.
I guess my dad was more right than I am. Yeah, it becomes, it's a weird balance, but also think, and what you're talking about, what's key for us, because you're not just... Your job isn't just editing us talking about movies or you reviewing the movies. You're, you're doing writing. You're working on screenplays. You're working on shows. You're being creative. And I think it's important, as much as you want to be obsessed with this stuff and should be, to get into it. A friend's, a real close friend of mine in my 20s, her older brother, we're going out for his birthday, driving around West Hollywood, and I went to the Motherlode and the Abbey and all these wonderful gay bars there, and I had a great time.
Yeah.
And he was in the front seat with me. I was driving him. I was a sober driver back then.
Oh, nice.
Very good. Mommy'd be proud of me back then. And I was not a very social person. I just wanted to stay in my room. This would be about 24, 25. And I just wanted to stay... I wanted to stay in the room and watch movies and talk about Star Wars and all that other stuff. And my friend's older brother turned to me and was like, you know, this is just in terms of getting outside and being more social. He's like, I know you're a writer. You have to write the other side of the page. And that is your life.
Yeah.
And you have to have something to write about.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Because I think about the long run, you know, what my legacy is going to be, you know, what am I going to leave behind?
Oh, that's big.
I think about it all the time because it's like, what's the
point? No wonder you're in your head.
Well, because I think about all the time, like, what's the point of doing all this? Like, where is it eventually going to go?
Right.
Excuse me. And a lot of the times, you know, I know, especially from meeting a lot of fans at fan meetups or Star Wars Celebration or anything like that, I've learned that there's so many people out there that want to be where we're at, and it makes me a hell of a lot more grateful for what we're doing, because I'm at a point right now where it's like I am living a dream. I get to edit things that revolve around movies, and I get to do, you know, I have the privilege of writing something and then eventually maybe it coming to life with all my friends, you know, and I just living that up as much as I can. And so I think it's very important to continuously remind myself where I am right now and all the people that surround me, because one day it might not be here. And, you know, and maybe one day I'm back, you know, I can't see myself, but I'm editing at a job that I don't want to be editing for, you know, so.
Well, look, my day job, the one that everyone hears about, was a security field and security director at the end of that career, 17 years. Came after my career in radio. And I can tell you, I was 18 through 21, 22 at that time, so a little younger than you are now. But I wish I had someone, and I did, but more directly kick my ass with perspective. Because this was a dream I had, talking into microphones professionally, starting at like 3 years old. And I had this job in radio, and I acted like I hated it. I would do it on air. I was good. I was learning. There were some times I was actually pretty bad, but I was learning. And I'd get off air, and I'd just run and go play tennis with my friend, and I didn't work on my career, and I just kind of – and I get recognized. My voice or name would get recognized every once in a while. And that went away one morning, like 8:30 on a Saturday morning, January 1998. You're laid off. You're done. And it was all gone. And then I had to go work at a movie theater. And to sell tickets to someone who I'd interviewed on my show. And they're aren't you the... Yes, I am. And so, to you, it's good that you have that self-check of perspective where you are now.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it goes down to time management. I think one of my favorite episodes that you've ever done was talking about time management. And how this is a while ago. And
sure. That, glad you listened.
Of course. No, I'm a big fan, Ken. I'm telling you. I'm not saying that. It's hard... It is and it's not, because I'll find myself on an open weekend, like on a Saturday.
Sure.
And like, okay, I have all the time in my world right now to sit down in front of my computer and hash something out.
Right.
And then, you know, eventually make do with it, you know. And then sometimes it's like, I'm not feeling it right now.
Yeah.
I'll do it tomorrow. And that's like every day with this book I'm trying to write.
Yeah.
Like I've been stuck on chapter one for months just because, you know, it's just like, I'm worthless. This isn't good. It's not good. And so it's just the struggle is real, as they say, as the kids say, you know?
The struggle is real. Yeah. It is discipline. It is that learning to write for craft, not from inspiration point, particularly in your life. The book is daunting. Fiction, nonfiction, what is it?
It's fiction.
Fiction.
Yeah.
The life and times of cops are not happening yet.
Not just yet. No, no. I'm a big Stephen King fan. And, you know, Agatha Christie, even Mary Shelley. I love Frankenstein's one of my favorite books of all time.
You like the scary pictures.
I do like the scary stuff. And, you know, I've been working on an idea that I think is pretty frightening. But it's also like against everything that I believe as well, because,
really?
You know,
enticing. What does that mean?
No, it's just, I'm not a huge believer in, I'm not very spiritual or anything like that.
Catholic school will do that to a lot.
A little bit. Yeah. But I mean,
all due respect to Catholics.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Cause I have all the respect in the world for anybody who has religious beliefs. But it's also cause the story is about, you know, ghosts and whatnot.
Okay.
And I don't believe in ghosts either, but I like the idea.
I was just going to ask you, you don't believe, because you love horror and stuff like that, so no ghost stories.
No.
Would you ever go on like a ghost hunt?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah, because we've joked about this on Wangers. It's always about putting perspective and a little bit of logic into a situation, you know, because you know that scenario right there of let's go to this place that is, you know, supposedly haunted, and you're going to be in there with a camera, and let's see if you can catch some stuff. And so if I hear something, am I automatically going, is that a ghost, or is my head playing tricks with me? But I also love that idea, and that's kind of what the story I'm trying to tell is kind of about, is whether something is real or if it's not, if it's just your head playing with you.
I'd love that. I'd love a schmo's ghost hunt.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would love that more than anything. Good Makuga. Strap a GoPro on him.
Oh, Makuga.
That would be the greatest thing in the world. Because as much as I don't believe it, I love it. I love that
whole... You love getting scared?
Yeah. I love getting freaked out. Like, I joked about that story about me having that maybe sleep paralysis moments.
Yes.
And as scary as it was incredibly inspiring. It made me want to just write and do things. You know,
Terminator was a nightmare that James Cameron had.
Absolutely.
Right?
You know, if something really terrifies me to the point where, you know, it gets under my skin, and, you know, if a movie can almost prove to me that, you know, these supernatural things actually exist, there's nothing more inspiring in the world for me for that, you know. So, and, you know, and I see, especially with horror, it's such a genre that, you know, could be handled so small and so well.
Right.
And you look at all the great directors that are out right now, like James Wan, Lee Whannell, he's done some stuff. Like, these guys started with such small aspirations, and now they're off doing these huge, incredible things, you know? And so I think me and Cody, we like to use that kind of, you know, process to maybe eventually get, you know, bigger and better than just, you know, just YouTube, you know? And I don't mean like
directing a feature.
Yeah.
But you're not stopping to that.
No, not at all.
You're stopping yourself.
Like, I always imagined us, you know, doing short films and scary stuff on YouTube eventually.
Right.
To just, you know, staying away from YouTube and just take it to a film festival and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, see.
The old-fashioned route.
Just the old-fashioned route. I've always wanted to do that and put it up on a big screen for, you know, 10, 15 people.
Is the web series you guys working on, that's not horror?
No. It's a sci-fi comedy. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are so funny.
He's the funny one.
Cody.
I have to just kind of be there with him.
Yeah, you're right. I should have interviewed Cody
first. You should have, yeah.
No, you're funny too, and you guys work well together. I mean, Cody's a gem, and you met Cody cold like the rest of us, right?
Yeah, I interviewed him because he was the closest person to me. And I wanted to carpool. No, it wasn't necessarily that.
Yeah, you were there because you were with me, right? Did you have to interview him next?
I interviewed him one time before that.
Oh, you pre-interviewed him.
Yeah, pre-interviewed him because he was living in Corona at the time, and that was a little bit closer. It's still far from
when
I was living with my folks, but I met with him, and then, you know, then he came and watched us eat at Chili's.
Well, we made Cody sit outside. Well, I went out to talk to him. With JT and you?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Oh no. I think it might have been you and Cody.
I can't remember.
A long time.
I'll have to get Cody on to
get
the whole story. But this poor 110-pound junior high kid sitting out there looking in the window at 9 of his I don't want to say heroes, but nine people that he's a fan of.
Right.
Chowing down on chips and salsa and awesome blossoms and crap.
Yep.
And I'm here in a suit going, all right, kid. And I was like, the last thing I was like, you don't get starstruck, right, kid? No, I'm good, Mr. Knapsack. All right.
Did you say Mr. Knapsack?
No.
Oh, I was going to say.
Come inside. Get yourself some chips and salsa.
He's just a very quiet person. He's very just to himself as well. And but that's kind of the thing about, like, I never could imagine that he would be like a writing partner to me and we'd be doing these incredible projects. So it was awesome that it turned out that way. Now that I could, you know, because I'm sure I drive him insane sometimes because I'm always like, I want to do this web series. I get that probably from Christian a lot too. It's just like, I want to do this. I want to do it. Like, I want to just keep going and doing all these things. And I never want to stop. And sometimes I get a little carried away. Like, we're going to do this web series. We're going to do it. No, you know what? Let's put that on hold. Let's do this Halloween fan film. Let's do that instead. How about that? So
you need someone like Cody to grab you, calm you down.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he's a great writer. He really is. And, you know, cause he actually knows how to write a script too. Cause I would write scripts and it wouldn't be formatted really well. Cause I never learned how to write a script, and then I give it to him and then he would just make it look pretty.
All you have to do is get final draft.
I know.
That's
I know.
All you have to do.
I know. Yeah. I'm the idea man. I like to be the idea man.
That's fine. You know, when I wrote with Matt Key, he was more the idea man, and I was the first draft man. And then he, you know, I was like, all right, let me take your idea and get it down into three acts and put it out there, and then you go make it better, detail and everything like that.
Right.
So you guys, you and Cody got some plans together. You got a future as writing creative partners.
Right.
It's adorable.
Yeah. I mean, hey, it's just, you know, it's because we can right now. I know the guy's getting married, which is, you know, I don't know how that's going to change in the near future. but, you know, he's great. She's a great girl, too. And, you know, I love those two.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we just try to, like, hey, let's do some stuff just in case.
Just in case.
If you guys have a kid soon, that's going to definitely change things. But I don't know their plans on that.
So. Yeah. Well, I will ask him in person. Yes. We're talking a little bit about Cody Hall. Well, Capster, Christian Ruvakaba, and Flippy Flop Flop, Shop and Shop to the Flip Flop, and you don't stop.
My favorite.
Your favorite.
Yeah.
You are a great young talent. We are happy to have on board and see you exceed us. And I do believe, much like a parent who wants his child to do better than himself, you are, since I'm almost as old as your father, I can say I definitely have already think you've exceeded my work as the producer of the Schmoes, and I believe you will find yourself with a long career ahead of you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I am off at the Shady Oaks retirement with Mark Ellis and Josh McCouga. Though now the McCouga's getting married.
Now
we might have had to give up his room.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Maybe me and Beardo. No, Beardo's in love too. God, you're all in love.
Yeah,
it's something else. We'll work on that.
Yeah,
we'll work on that. Well, I want to appreciate you coming in and on your day off and talking to me here.
Absolutely.
It's been long overdue. You were good. Tell everyone where they can find these projects, amateur films, and Wangers, and all that stuff.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for allowing me to come on and talk on this microphone with you. It's been something that I've been wanting to do for a very long time as well, because I'm still a huge fan. I still look up to you. I think you are the funniest person on this.
I appreciate
everything that we do and everything. I've seen your stand-up in person, live. I love it. It's incredible.
I went
to the Comic-Con that one year.
You saw the famous one, that the last stand-up set I ever intend to do.
Oh, no. You got to do more.
The first 5 minutes were horrible. At least tell me, you have to be honest with me and let me know the first 5 minutes of that set were rough.
No, I think part of it is, and I don't mean to get off too much on topic, but I think part of it is because I know you so well now that your humor sticks to me maybe than it wouldn't stick to anybody else.
Right,
maybe.
Right.
And so, you know, anything that you do, whether it's subtle, intentional, unintentional, is going to be funny to me.
Well, I appreciate that. Anyways, you have a lot of where can they find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter at Copster15. I do the Wanger Show, which is on the SK Plus channel. You can also find that on the Schmoes Know iTunes feed. Obviously, Schmoes Know every single Wednesday now at 6 p.m. PST.
Yeah.
Every single Wednesday, a little bit earlier for you kids out there. And whatever projects I've got going, I will make announcements on Twitter. Twitter. I love teasing. I like making little teasers. I like
You're good at it.
I like promoting stuff that way.
Yeah.
So you know, if you see something in the next couple of months, then you know that's what they'll be. And if anybody ever asks about the next 30 for 30, the John Rocha one, it's coming. It's going
on the way.
It's going to happen. So
and yeah, if you're a Schmodown fan, and we've gained a lot of new fans recently on Collider Videos Movie Trivia Schmodown, and you haven't gone back and watched the 30 for 30 parody video of the rise and fall of JTE, please do. It's one of the finest things I've seen and been a part of. It's very funny, very smart, especially if you're really into what we do on the Schmodown. So do that. Cobster Christian, is very good to have you in here. It won't be the last time. And Cody Hall, if you're listening, don't worry. Your time's coming.
Yes.
Beardo, hold on for a little bit. All right, guys, that's it for now. You can find the Knapsack Files on iTunes, Podomatic, and Stitcher. If you're on iTunes, subscribe, rate, and review. That'd be great. I do have a Patreon page. If you'd like to support, go ahead and support there. You get a free bonus show every month, and that's tailored specifically from Patreon suggestions and for you, the Patreon-only audience. So go check it out there. And follow me on Twitter, at KedKnapsack, hashtag the Knapsack Files, to join the conversation and talk to me and Cobster. So, for Cobster, for Cody Hall, who wasn't here but will be here, and everyone else, we'll see you guys next time. Bye.